So,
do I hear a television?
Yeah, sorry, that shouldn't be on. Give me a second.
I couldn't tell if Andy was doing like a video clip or something.
Do I hear a television? Oh yeah, that should be on.
My Spotify just started randomly playing an ad.
That's funny.
Time to learn, time to laugh. It's the Death Address.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Death Address. We're going to be talking about Albert Einstein today. Andy went ahead and did the research, so he'll be leading the charge on this one, and the rest of us will be here to hopefully make you laugh. So take it away, Andy.
I just want to start off by saying Einstein has way too much history to cover in this podcast. So I got the major things. I got his origins kind of as a scientist, his love life, because that's crazy, his involvement in World War II and kind of as a pacifist throughout most of his life, and then his very strange, his normal death with very strange aftermath.
Sweet.
Cool.
He also went by Bert, I'm pretty sure.
What?
You know,
I'm just kidding.
I never read that.
he would alternate between Al and Bert depending on the day. I'm excited for his love fiascos. I feel like there's going to be some weird shit there.
Oh, it's a fiasco for sure. So yeah, his period of life and death is, the period of his life is late to 1800s to 1955. He was born in 1879 in the Kingdom of Württemberg in the German Empire. March 14th is his birthday.
Nice. Very well.
He was a non-observant Friday?
Is that why that's Pi Day?
Yeah, Pi Day. You said March 14th, right?
3.14.
Oh yeah. I don't think it has anything to do with Einstein.
Wow.
I don't think he invented pi or anything, but if he did, that's a major oversight on my research.
Honestly, it is kind of crazy that he was born on Pi Day, though. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was like, wait, what?
All right. Well, he was a non-observant Ashkenazi Jew. I don't know much about that, but that's what he was. He wasn't very religious. Yeah, he wasn't very religious. He was really just Jewish in, like nationality or identity. But
by association?
Right. He wasn't very spiritual. He didn't really believe in God. He kind of thought God was a silly weakness of humanity and their belief in him. So, or her. All right. So his family moved to Munich in 1880 when he was just 1 year old, and his father and uncle opened up a direct current electrical company called Elektrotechnische Fabrik J. Einstein and C.
You could tell right before you read it that it was going to be something ridiculous. The way that you're like, it was called.
The long ass title.
I like it though, not gonna lie. It is a very random title.
Yeah, they did pretty well for like 14 years, but eventually had to sell because they were outbid by another company, an alternating current company, to the city of Munich to set up electrical lighting. And they couldn't afford to convert all their equipment from direct current to alternating current, which was a regular thing of the day. Mr. What's his name? Tesla kind of invented the alternating currents and all that stuff. So
Nikola.
Oh, that was a big deal. So, Albert came from a kind of scientific family of electrical engineers. And that's what his father wanted him to do, was to be an electrical engineer.
Yeah.
So, there's this myth that he flunked out of math in high school. That did not actually happen. He just clashed with the authority figures of his high school, and he didn't like conform to the strict teaching. He was a teenager. He was past that stage.
Fight the power.
he kind of felt that everyone kind of curbed his creativity in the school system, so he didn't like that very much.
So he didn't flunk out of math, or he did?
No, he was like years ahead of everyone his age mathematically and in philosophy and music.
He flunked everybody else out of math.
Right.
Okay.
He screwed the curve of the class. Everybody else was failing.
He was the kid everybody hated because the curve was so high because of him.
Well, so he actually, when his family moved to Italy, he did not go with them at first. He stayed in Munich to keep doing his electrical engineer studies. But then when he clashed with the authorities and stuff, he ended up traveling to join his family by the end of that year. So 1 year later, when he was 16 years old, he took an entrance exam into the Swiss Federal Polytechnic School in Zurich.
Fancy.
No big deal.
Right?
NBD. Yeah.
And he did actually fail this entrance exam, but just the general standard, he like had exceptional grades in math and physics and, you know, the stuff he was good at.
Right.
So he wasn't much of an actual writer.
Right. He was so the principal of the school told him to go to this other school in Aarau, Switzerland. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. A-A-R-A-U.
We'll go with
Aarau.
Aarau.
Hey, are you making a roux for that mac and cheese?
Or those biscuits and gravy? Mainly the gravy part?
Mainly the gravy, because the biscuits don't need a roux.
They don't need a roux at all.
Says the Argovian Cantonal School in Aarau, and I don't really know what that means, but that's what it was. Yeah, so he moved there, and he moved in with a professor of the school, Jost Winterler, and he fell in love with this dude's daughter. This is where his like his love life kind of began. Was Marie Winterler?
Scandalous.
Okay. Woo.
Yeah, he liked her a lot.
Somebody's daughter.
Someone might say too much.
Yeah. I don't know if they really dated or if they canoodled or anything like that. I don't know if there was shenanigans, but he loved her. So,
what is it that Sheldon always says in Big Bang Theory? They engaged in Bazooka? Something. Starts with
coitus?
Coitus. Yeah, they engaged in coitus.
Coitus?
Okay, so the next year in January, while he's living in Aarau, Switzerland, he renounced his German citizenship so that he wouldn't have to be drafted in the German army. He was really into peace and science. That was his thing.
So war really wasn't his thing.
Not really his thing, but that comes up later. There's some irony in his life. So.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So in September of that year, once he was in school for that whole year at this other place to finish his secondary schooling, he went back, took the entrance exam to the Polytechnic School, and passed at 17 years old. So not really that far ahead of, like, you know, college age type stuff, but he's a clever fella. So he got into that school, and that is where he met his first wife. I don't know how his relationship with Marie went, but it pretty much... You don't hear about him dating her after that. So in college, he meets Maliva Merrick, who was 20 years old, and she was the only woman in his degree program, which I have written down. Where was that? Mathematics, physics, teaching diploma. That's what he was going for.
Okay.
All right. No big deal. Yeah. Again.
I see you, Einstein.
Yeah. So he met Maliva. It's said that they worked on some papers together. She didn't contribute a whole lot to his findings, but she was in the same diploma. She was in the same diploma. She was very intelligent.
Obviously, there were air quotes when you said they worked on papers together.
they also had chemistry together, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Science stuff. Huh?
So they both graduated in 1900. After that, Einstein searched relentlessly for a teaching job, but could not find one, and eventually landed a job at the Federal Office for Intellectual Property in the capital of Switzerland, Bern, which is what I thought you said earlier when you said he went by Bert.
Oh, no.
He just says it, you're like, the son of a bitch ruined my research.
When I feel like people think that he stole patents when he worked there.
Really? I did not come across that in my
Bert studies. I've heard that before. Maybe more in like a joking sense then.
Einstein.
I'm sure everybody was like, this fucker stole my research because he was so smart.
Yeah. He stole my intellectual property. He
achieved celebrity status. That was kind of, he was almost like an unattractive Tony Stark of his day. Like, he was like,
I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, my man.
And he did, so, he did have quite a few love relationships. So
he made a lot of coitus in his day.
Sir Coitus.
He worked on a lot of papers in his day.
He and Maliva got married in 1903, and I'm going to jump to his relationship section. I have that in a different area. Yeah, married Maliva 1903 and had a couple sons with her. It was actually found out in 1987, so pretty recently, that they had a daughter before they were married. But she was either, no one knows what happened to her. She was either given up for adoption or died of scarlet fever, I guess, are the two main theories about her.
Did they ever find like anything in writing about her? Or did, was it just like thought that she had been born?
It was like some letters exchanged that they found writing about her between Einstein and Maliva, apparently. Okay. Or Maliva and her family, I believe. I should have written that down, but yeah. Her name was Lieserl. Lieserl? I don't. L I e s e r l.
Huh.
I have no idea.
I got nothing.
Lieserl. I don't know.
Lieserl. It's like Mithril, but Lieserl.
Mithril.
She wasn't quite as durable as Mithril, though. She. No, sorry.
That Mithril armor is strong.
So he had his first son, Hans Albert, in 1904. And Hans was pretty dope. He went on to be an engineer later in his life. He was a good kid. And then he had Edward in 1910 with Maliva. And Edward, I think, had schizophrenia later in his life. Oh. I think Maliva spent the majority of her twilight years kind of taking care of him because he was a bit of a troubled individual. But during this time, there's a lot of science happening. He's working on his stuff. He's publishing papers. The theory of relativity he publishes in 1905, but it doesn't really get accepted at that time. It's just when he published it. There's not really enough time to cite all the places he worked during this period of his life. It was like Dakota's resume, honestly.
That's impressive.
Yeah. That's one thing I have that is impressive for me.
Big old rap sheet.
So he was kind of cheating around, or at least maybe not cheating around. He was in love with his first cousin, Elsa.
Naturally.
I like how you switched that like it nonchalantly. He wasn't cheating around.
So he was from the south part of Germany. Got it.
I mean, he was a German citizen, but he mostly lived in Switzerland.
I mean, that
things are neutral there. You just do it too long.
Yeah. Coitus is coitus in Switzerland.
I think he started his relationship with Elsa in 1912. And were not divorced until 1919. They separated in 1914 when Maliva found out that he was in love with Elsa.
Huh.
And she moved back to Zurich to stay with her parents and stuff. So they officially divorced in 1919, and Einstein married Elsa that same year.
Elsa.
Oh, he didn't waste any time.
Elsa sounded like a cold bitch.
All the love people are cringing right now.
Get it? Get it? Because she's frozen.
Yeah. Here we go. So he and Elsa were super happy. I don't think they had any more kids. I didn't read that he had any more kids. If they did, it's another oversight of my research. This guy's life was insane. He was doing so much.
Including his cousin.
So, yeah, he moved to Berlin in 1914 with Maliva, and then she found out about his cousin, and so she went back to Zurich. He stayed in Berlin. He became a professor at a German school called Charles Ferdinand University, and, oh, God, I'm skipping around.
I have a question about the cousin.
That German school, because that was in Prague, and he became an Austrian citizen, and then 3 years later moved to Berlin.
I have a question about the cousin still.
Okay.
When they moved and he was still with Maliva, where was the cousin the whole time? Did like the cousin move with them and Maliva was just like, it's weird your cousin's moving here too.
Or was she just like hiding in the alley waiting for her to leave the apartment every day?
That probably bars a little bit more research. I wonder where.
If it took her a couple of years to figure it out, they probably did a damn good job of hiding it, as bad as that sounds.
They exchanged a lot of letters. They found letters of Einstein being like, you know, I've wasted my life with Maliva when I really love you. And
yeah, that'll do it.
When I really love you.
I'm a genius, but I can't figure out my love. He's Borat now, apparently.
Yeah, he took a lot of accents.
All right, let's jump back to Berlin, 1914. Shit's ramping up. World War One is coming. He's not involved at all. He's just into science. He's a pacifist. He doesn't fight in World War One or anything like that. So he keeps doing his science, and 7-year jump here. In 1921, he wins his Nobel Prize for physics for the law of photoelectric effect.
Which is?
Fancy.
Which is something I can Google and talk about. yeah.
It sounds like the electric effect took photos for people and he was the first to discover such.
It's a phenomenon in which electrically charged particles are released from or within a material when it absorbs electromagnetic radiation. Mm. The effect is often defined as the ejection of electrons from a metal plate when light falls on it.
A camera.
And he proved this from it was an eclipse. I forget where he saw the eclipse, but he was able to record the eclipse and show how light did that thing I just read.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That was absolutely delightful. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Of course. So yeah,
I'm glad we had the expertise to explain that.
And I'm a little confused. I'm wondering if he won a Nobel Prize before this because he offered Maliva his Nobel Prize in the divorce, but that would be 2 years earlier.
He was a time traveler.
So did they actually get divorced, though?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they did actually get divorced 2 years earlier. Like, it was official. It wasn't like 2 years down the line. They're like, hey, fuck it. We're going to sign papers. You can have my Nobel Prize and get the fuck out of my life. I'm going to go
shack up with my cousin. Yeah. He was cocky. He was like, I know I'm going to win one, and we're
going to
get this now, and you can have it later.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, is that a nice move or a dick move for him to be like?
She's like, I'm leaving you to go to Berlin. He's like, hey, sign the papers. I'll send you my Nobel Prize, bitch.
Yeah. What was the Nobel Prize worth back then? I know today it's like $1 million.
Probably just like a high five and a good job.
You did it.
Pretty much.
Like nowadays, his Nobel Prize is probably worth shit. Millions, if not billions of dollars. So she should have held on to it.
Can you sign it? Did he sign his Nobel Prize?
Did he sign it? Did he autograph it?
Did he autograph this thing?
Oh, so, okay, in 1918, he was, he signed over the award money to his wife because...
She caught him cheating
on her with his cousin.
A long time before the Royal Swedish Academy conferred upon him the award, he signed over the award money to his wife. So I guess he got the money before he actually got the award.
Interesting.
Yeah. In the case of a voluntary divorce, the Nobel Prize would be ceded to you in a full priority, is what he wrote.
So, not much of a dick move, I guess, and kind of a nice move, I guess. Like, hey, I'm banging my cousin. Sorry, yeah. here's the money.
She was still taking care of the kids, too, especially one with special needs.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's my cousin banging compensation.
Don't tell anybody that I'm banging my cousin.
That's what it was.
Just it's hush money. Hush money. Just.
I was fine back then.
Darwin started it.
Everyone's doing it.
It was cool for them. So yeah, that's when he started his travel abroad. He visited the White House, thought Americans were, and I quote, pretty dope.
Wait, really? That's a quote?
That's literally what right. he said.
No.
And I quote, pretty dope. Broads. Wait, that's what he said? No.
No, absolutely not.
That's not a quote.
He did have a quote that was nice about Americans, about how they're like, oh yeah, they're so confident and stuff. I love it here.
It's probably translated wrong.
He probably meant, dude, Americans are dope, as in like the bad kind of dope. We're like, dude, that guy's a dope. What an idiot.
They're dopes, but they're dope.
These guys are really cool. They do the same shit here. They love their cousins.
So he went to Alabama first.
So he was, he traveled abroad. He went to lots of different places, not just America. It's just so much what he did. This is kind of around the time he won the Nobel Prize, so he was pretty much a celebrity.
He was kind of a big deal.
He was. In 1922, he became a member of the International Committee on Intellectual Cooperation of the League of Nations in Geneva.
Dude, he's like Khaleesi, mother of dragons, with all these titles that he's got going on.
Are we sure that like this isn't like Attila the Hun reincarnated with a bigger brain?
A bigger brain.
Because he's doing everything.
He was a pacifist in his second life. That makes sense. He was like, man,
he's taking the alternate so many route.
People. Man, he's like, I killed so many people that I died from a bloody nose. What kind of shit is that? I'm just going to be smart.
So this was an international exchange program between scientists, researchers, teachers, artists, and intellectuals. So it's kind of like the justice.
Yeah, I was going to say, sounds pretty justice-y.
Yeah. So he visited America again in 1930. He was a member of this committee until 1932. So he's currently in the committee. He visits America again, December 1930, and stays there for several months this time. It was supposed to be like a 2-month visit, but again, he really liked America and he was really famous here. He was like huge celebrity status. Everyone wanted to meet him. He went to all these parties. He was given the key to New York City when he visited Manhattan. Like,
dang.
He was, we loved him. There was a full-size statue of him outside of like a church in New York's Riverside Church or something. And he celebrated Hanukkah with 15,000 people in Madison Square Garden that December.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's a big party.
So, yeah.
Pre-COVID.
Yeah. He kind of opened that and partied.
Pre-COVID.
Now, Elsa, unfortunately, is entering kind of a rough health patch. She dies in 1936 from, what was it? I have it
here. He took her away from her ice castle and killed her from incest.
Oh, shoot. Did I not write
that? I thought he was supposed to be really smart.
You know, inside.
He was. That's why he kept it in the family.
It's all in the family.
What did Elsa Einstein die of? I swore I wrote this down. There we go. Heart and liver problems. Aww. Yeah. Yeah, so she had some complications, but he loved her like his first cousin.
He's been waiting all episode for that.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, did that America trip, went back to Berlin, hung out for like 3 more years, and then visited the U.S. again in early 1933 when the Nazis were beginning to rise to power.
Here comes the Nazis.
He was like, this is kind of scary. I'm going to go over to the U.S. I like it over there. They're nice over
there's
there.
There's no Nazis in there.
Yeah. No Nazis yet. That's a 2020.
It was pre-COVID. So,
they keep coming. Yeah. It's pre-COVID, post-COVID.
So he kind of knew that he wouldn't be able to go back to Germany, but he still tried in March of that same year. So he only visited the U.S. for a little bit in the beginning of the year, went back in March, and then by April, Germany was placing laws restricting Jewish people from holding official positions in teaching, government, you know, etc.
Pretty much everything he was doing.
Germany started to do what Germany did.
They started doing the thing. A magazine placed a $5,000 bounty on his head, declaring him an enemy of the state, and this is a quote, not yet hanged.
Oh, all right.
So he was basically a super Jew, and the Germans were like, we need to rid of him and all of the others.
Right.
We must get rid of it.
That is pretty much it. They were like, no, he's got to go. did not like him. So he moved to Belgium, rented a house there for a little bit, moved from there to England. And eventually in England, he had like a whole security detail. He met with Winston Churchill and nice. Talked about some stuff. Yeah, he was like very protected there because, again, he's like a global celebrity. I skipped in the intro talking about the, you know, description of the story and the region, place and time period. But it's because he's global, like he just went everywhere. Wasn't like a singular region. And eventually moved to America. That would be 1933 still. Yep. So moved to America, took up a position at the Institute for Advanced Study, which was a place for refugees, it was a refugee for scientists fleeing from Germany. So he met a lot of different Jewish scientists there, or probably people he already knew and was friends with. And he remained there. And in 1935, he finally applied for U.S. citizenship and became a U.S. citizen.
U.S. Einstein.
So yeah, that was a year before his wife passed, unfortunately. But he did have another love after his wife. But
his first cousin. One,
I don't think they ended.
Funny, they're the same thing.
Oh.
While he was here at the Institute for Advanced Study, he tried a couple different things. One of them to develop a unified field theory. And that did not succeed. He failed in that attempt because everyone's kind of failed in that attempt so far. But he was one of the early people to try it. Obviously, war's ramping up in Europe. And by 1939, this is where the Manhattan Project stuff comes up.
Oh.
Ooh, the sexy stuff now.
And this is interesting. I don't remember if I knew this or not, but he did not work on the Manhattan Project at all. He was not a part of it.
Really?
Because that's the time travel one, right?
No. God damn it.
I thought that was the one where they tried to get back to the dinosaurs.
He wanted to get his dinosaur back so bad. From his days as a toad, he started the Manhattan Project.
You knew it was coming somewhere in the episode. I got it in there.
Because dinosaurs, that's why.
Sorry.
The Kung Fuhrer. So this is interesting. There are all these Hungarian scientists that either were working on atomic weaponry for Hitler or like knew about people working on atomic weaponry for Hitler. And they tried to warn the U.S. that Germany was developing an atomic bomb. However, U.S. didn't really trust them. They didn't give them much credence. They're like, who are you Hungarian scientist guys? So the Hungarian scientist appealed to Einstein with his celebrity status to write Roosevelt and urge him to fund atomic research in the U.S.
Right on.
So Einstein leveraged his connections with the Belgian royal family in order to meet with Roosevelt at the White House after sending him a bunch of letters warning him about Hitler doing this. And he convinced Roosevelt to enter the atomic arms race.
Let's go.
You can't hug your children with nuclear arms.
You can if your children are also nuclear.
They wouldn't let him on the project, or he just didn't want to because of his pacifist ideologies. It was kind of a combination.
That makes sense.
And he later was cited saying that this was the one mistake he made in his life, urging Roosevelt to do this. The only justification he felt was that they needed to beat Hitler to developing atomic weaponry, but he still regrets it.
Yeah, sometimes it just comes down to beating Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so I lied earlier when I said he became a U.S. citizen in 1935. He applied in 1935 and was granted citizenship in 1940. And during this time, so yeah, he's really not involved in the Manhattan Project. You know, they're doing their thing, developing atomic weaponry. The war's raging. Hawaii's been hit. Everything's going on. And Einstein is doing all this social activism. He joined the NAACP.
Nice. Wait, he joined the rap group?
No, that's you're thinking of NWA.
Oh, dang.
NWACP.
Fuck these police coming out.
And drop bombs. Atomic ones.
So yeah, he considered racism to be America's worst disease because he noticed the pattern of how it was passed down generationally. You guys remember W.E.B. Du Bois, the black activist during the 40s, 30s, 40s, and probably 20s, too.
I know the name.
Yeah, so he had to go to court where he was for something, probably activist stuff, you know, institutionalized racism. And Einstein got the whole case against him dropped just when he announced he would be a character witness for him. The judge was like, oh, never mind. He's good. Like, Einstein's got your back, so you must be fine. So he really was like a superhero in certain ways. He was heavily involved in ethics discussions. He wrote letters to Gandhi. They chatted a bit. He was like, Gandhi's going to be a role model for generations to come, which he was kind of right about.
I mean, obviously, Gandhi was a superhero, too, so he was forming the Justice League. Of course they were talking.
Yep.
It's the super best friends.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The super best friends. Sorry.
Pay attention, Zack Snyder. This is how you make it.
This is how you do it.
This is the director's cut right here.
It all started with Albert Einstein.
We're getting our director's cut on Netflix, not HBO Max, right? The real super best friends featuring Einstein, Gandhi, Attila the Hun, and Sigurd.
There's going to be dinosaurs.
Yeah, they all have dinosaurs.
Don't forget Black Dynamite.
He's the leader. He's the ringleader that brings them all in like Sam Jackson did with Nick Fury.
Hell yeah. Threw that shit before I came in the room. So, yeah, he really was not involved in any kind of weapons redevelopment. His only involvement was convincing the U.S. to even enter the arms race. So that is pretty much all he contributed to World War II. In science, he just, you know, he came up with theory of relativity, the unified or not unified field theory, the electromagnetic thing I said earlier. Sorry, I didn't do it.
That one. This is weird because Jordan just so much. Plucked. I had a crazy eyebrow hair and she decided to just do it right now. But you haven't talked about his eyebrows.
Yeah,
big eyebrows.
He was awarded the most giant eyebrow award in 1943. They did use some of his eyebrows to develop the atomic bomb. So that was
they sprinkled a little bit on top to make sure it worked.
So yeah, we're just gonna kind of, you know, World War II happened. We know the stuff. We know the story. But we're gonna skip to 1948, which is where he had a rupture of an abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Oh shit!
I read about
that. Sounds horrible.
Crazy. Yeah. Rupture abdominal aneurysm. I had to Google it because I didn't understand. I was like, I thought an aneurysm was like its own thing, but. It was a tear in one or more of the layers of the wall, the aorta. And yeah, he had a ruptured aneurysm.
I said, was it not you guys that we were talking about that with? I thought it was only like brain aneurysm, but apparently you can have an aneurysm anywhere in your body.
Interesting.
Yeah. And obviously his brain was invincible, so.
Right, so it's not going to happen there.
So, yeah, there's internal bleeding and he had it like patched up in 1948. So he did live about 7 more years. But in 1955, when it ruptured again, that's when he was kind of like, I'm good. I'll prolong my life artificially. I have done so much. Like he was pretty satisfied. And, he told everyone that.
I'm ready to go be with my cousin.
Mm-hmm. He died the next day after saying he was okay and didn't want to go on with surgery. He died the next day in Princeton Hospital.
So, I mean, ideally he had a peaceful death?
Yeah. Yeah.
He went out on his own terms, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's said to this day he had a big smile on his face with those big bushy eyebrows flowing in the wind. Honestly, somehow there was wind in that hospital.
Probably true, because everyone was like, yeah, he was a genius, but he was very childlike, his like personality.
Yeah, isn't there like a rumor that he might have had like Asperger's or like autism?
Probably. He was definitely not neurotypical.
Because like there was people, I remember like discussions, he would like go ride his bike for like hours in the middle of the street and just like ride in circles.
Is that how acid was invented? No, just kidding.
I fucking hope so.
Naturally.
That sounds like something it the clown would do.
It clown.
Oh yeah, Pennywise. Hold on, retake that one. That sounds like something Pennywise the It Clown would do.
But the big thing here is he went out with a smile on his face because he knew he was going to go see his cousin.
That's true.
Yes.
/ wife.
Elsa, the snow queen, ice queen.
In her ice palace.
Was there anything else after he died?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the interesting part. During his autopsy, the pathologist of Princeton Hospital, Thomas Stoltz Harvey, took it upon himself to decide, with no permission from family or anyone, to remove Einstein's entire brain for preservation in the hope that the neuroscientists of the future would be able to discover what made him so smart.
And it worked, so this right?
This is pretty upsetting. Well, not exactly.
I mean, I think we have more atom bombs now.
Yeah, we do have a lot of those.
They just have his brain in a military base, like hooked up in one of those Futurama cases, and
no,
just like working on bombs.
They don't, because he received reluctant approval from Hans, Einstein's son, to cut the brain into pieces and send them off to various scientists for research, for independent,
like a race to see who could figure it out first. Or they did some Osiris type shit, and they're like, you can't bring him back to life unless you have all of his brain to put him back together.
You need his whole brain and the Sword of Mars.
And the Sword of Mars.
And a dinosaur.
and his pet dinosaur that you can only get through his time machine. He lives on the other side.
Manhattan Project. Here we come.
Manhattan Project.
We're going to put this son of a bitch back together. Let's go.
So...
we can rebuild him. We have the technology. But there was one significant result of the study. In 1999, years later, they found more than average folds on his parietal lobe, which is an area that has been associated with mathematical and spatial ability.
All right.
Yeah, the wrinklier the brain, the smarter you are.
Yeah.
That's what it is, yeah.
So there's a part in this template that we have that says, talk about related deaths, if any. And I went a little dark with this, I guess.
Perfect.
I would say some related deaths were approximately the 225,000 people who died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki from the...
yeah, I mean, that would be a direct consequence of his actions, for sure.
It would absolutely be him. He was a pacifist and did not work on the bomb, but it was his letter that convinced Roosevelt and his correspondence that convinced Roosevelt to do it.
Actions have consequences, man.
They do.
Yeah, consequences.
So, yeah, I mean, there weren't many repercussions of his death, but his life, obviously, just huge, hugely impactful.
So I guess I'll ask you the same question I asked Jordan when she did hers last well, I guess 2 weeks ago now, based off of your research, since you did it and kind of learned a little bit more about Mr. Einstein here, what is kind of the moral or like big thing about his life that you took away from it, I guess?
Yes, I do have something for that. So my answer is, even a pacifist can be partially responsible for mass murder.
I do have something for this. I've been thinking about it hard.
But trying times call for desperate measures, and in Einstein's mind, the need to defeat Hitler in the arms race for atomic weaponry outweighed the ramifications of the U.S. entering the atomics arms race.
Which
these ramifications are still unresolved today. Like, that's
for sure. Which is, it's tough to look back on something like that, especially knowing what Hitler did, obviously, and being like, he made the wrong call, you know, because you never really know.
Well, as much as I hate to say it, though, the simple fact is that we were attacked on our own soil and we fucking ended it, you know?
Escalation. The U.S. is great at escalation.
Like, that's the thing, is like, we were at war and all of a sudden they bombed a harbor full of military forces out of nowhere and really got us involved. And then it was like, well, you should beat them to the atomic bomb. And then we were like, hey. And then we're like, all right, let's see what this does.
Okie dokie.
And it ended the war, you know?
So I feel like the true moral of the story is live fast, die hard, fuck your cousins.
I was like, live fast, die hard. Isn't that the die hard slogan? You just had to fuck your cousin into it. Bruce Willis is coming. Bruce Willis is coming.
Severus Snape did not fuck his cousin. Just saying.
All I know is when that door gets kicked in and Bruce Willis is pointing at you, you know your life's over.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I think that might be the time for the end of the episode, because we just went to talking about a big war and got to Bruce Willis, and, you know, so here we are.
We are off track officially, so let's wrap it up, I guess.
My closing quote is from Stephen Moffat, writer on Doctor Who, and that's, "Demons run when a good man goes to war."
Thanks for listening to The Death Address. Follow our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for exclusive information on what's to come and to ask us questions. Take a look at our website at www.deathshifter.com. You can find all of the links there, as well as some information about the Death Shifter team. If you're interested in supporting the show, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/deathshifter. We'll see you all next time. Till then, take care of yourselves and
don't forget to tip your death guides. Time to learn, time to laugh. It's the Death Address.